Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Tell me steak in a vamp doesn't get you a little bit juiced. Come on, say it. You can't fool me. Look in your eyes right after a kill. Just get hungry for more. You're way off base. Tell me that if you don't get in a good slaying, after a while, you just start itching for some vamp to show up so you can give him a good thumb.
Hello, everyone. How do you do? What a time to be alive, and what an episode for us to discuss in just a few moments.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm excited. But before we jump in, we just have a few announcements.
We do. Of course, it is January, a new month, which means that we are writing five more lyric sheets, handwritten lyric sheets. Each month we do five, and the proceeds all go to a different organization. January, all of the money is going to Time's Up, a unified call for change from women in entertainment for women everywhere. I think it's thematic to the episode, too. Bad girls, nasty women. Did you watch the Golden Globes? Did you hear Oprah's speech? Did you see when Natalie Portman said, all men?
Oh,
it was great. So you can go to bufferingthevampireslayer.com/greatergood. It'll direct you to the page where we sell those handwritten lyric sheets. You can get one for yourself. You can get one for maybe a woman that you love, a powerful, badass woman that deserves something good. You can get her one of these, and at the same time, you can also get all of us additional funding for this wonderful movement that has started that we believe in.
You could also get one for your friend who's sort of the underdog, who nobody takes care of, who's like living in the motel, even though there's totally a guest room at the summer's house.
Yeah, God damn it, get one for Faith. She deserves something.
Also, oh my gosh, guess what? In February, we will be doing one of our now infamous Buffy watches for our patrons. If you want to get in on that, you can definitely become a patron. Just go to our website at bufferingthevampireslayer.com and click on Patreon, and it will take you to through a magical portal to our wonderful secret garden of excitement and joy. We'll be announcing the date and all the details soon, so join us and see you in February.
Yeah, see you in February and every day until then. Listen, if you are so sad because you have just been wanting a Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy sweatshirt and they have not been in your size, don't fear. They are back in stock along with many other items. We have restocked the store after the holiday chaos, and so you can find a lot of things over there. Just go to bufferingthevampireslayer.com and click on shop. I want to let you know the Randy for Giles pins are not back in stock yet. We are working on it. The last pin company we used sent all of our pins to Australia, and they lost them forever, so we're working with a new pin company, and the pins will hopefully be back in stock within the month. We'll let you know when they get back. But there's a little button on the store page where you can click notify me, and many of you have. So if you are after a product that is out, just click on that little notify button, and then I think you get an email or something when the product comes back in stock.
Whew. Okay. Before we get into this episode, just want to warn you that Kristen got the chance to speak with Jack Plotnick, who, of course, you must already know, portrays Alan, assistant to the mayor, deputy mayor even?
Deputy mayor.
His official title.
I believe.
And she had an amazing conversation with Jack. He had so many fantastic stories, and really, really, really excited to share that interview with you later in this episode.
Yes, and everything that comes before and after that interview is just Jenny and I losing our minds. So buckle the fuck up!
I myself am buckled, so let us now advance directly and without hesitation into the episode.
Bad girls, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Kill a man. Yes,
but, oh.
Welcome welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer one at a time. I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I'm Kristen Russo. And this week we're talking about season 3, episode 14, Bad Girls, otherwise known as Season Faith, episode.
Can't even get through the intro in this episode before we deal it out to those who deserve it.
Yep, obviously it goes to Balthazar and the water. Just fucking kidding. Faith and Buffy. Listen, at the end of this whole thing, we're going to have a showdown for the Sexual Tension Award for the series. And I'm just putting my hat in the fucking ring right here.
This is the episode.
For Faith and Buffy. In this episode, I think it'll take the season. I think it'll take the series. God damn it.
Just two gal pals.
Gal
having it out
and around.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. 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 Anyway, we are professional ladies run a podcast and we have business to attend to. Stay tuned at the end of this podcast every week for an original song written by us recapping the Buffy episode we're discussing. And guess the fuck what? Somebody wrote in and was like, Kristen, maybe you should say fuck less because it's losing its meaning. And to that I say, I'm sorry, I can't.
Not this week, not anyway.
Today. Not today.
Yeah, Jess Abbott is back with us this week again.
Yes.
Reprising her role as Faith in the musical universe of our show. Hooray!
Jenny and Jess have been co-writing via Skype, and it has been a delight for me. I, like, walk by, and they're arguing about, like, what other sexy innuendo they could put in the song.
Right. It's been a hoot.
It is.
And so excited for you to hear it.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Bad Girls was written by Doug Petrie, directed by Michael Lang, and originally aired on February 9th, 1999.
Wow, 999.
Yeah, 999. Right. Yeah.
Well, 299. Well, two,
yeah. Okay.
Yep, great. Bad Girls is the one where
going to play the Sexual Tension Award jingle a third time, probably. But
probably,
like,
you think
we have a lot to get out of our systems. Sounds like someone else I can think of.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
I want everyone to know that if we were in a studio where I had a button that played the Sexual Tension Award jingle, you would be hearing it 1,000 times because it's my favorite joke. I keep stopping and looking at Jenny and being like, put it in again. Anyway, this is the one where Faith convinces Buffy to live on the wild side with fatal consequences. Thank you, IMDb, but you don't get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is also the one where Buffy and Faith are totally doing it, right?
Yeah. I mean, we open. Let's just jump right in because we have a lot to say. Oh, and not only do we have a lot to say, but as you probably heard in the intro, we also got to interview Jack Plotnick, who plays Alan.
What a peach.
So this episode is just going to be just full to its brims.
We also have an installment of Kate Leth's Buffy Fashion Watch from which you may never recover.
Yeah, it's true. It's warning lies ahead, risky business. Is that the category that you would put Kate's Fashion Watch in?
Yeah, that's where I'd put it.
Okay, So we jump right into this episode with same time slaying. We know how Jenny feels about same time slaying.
I mean, if you're going to kick off this episode with anything, let it be a same time slaying. Let everybody be thrown to the ground in the cemetery at the same time. Vampire on top, mid-conversation. Faith cannot get over the fact that Buffy has never done it with Xander. And here's why. Let me give you a window into the mind of a Sagittarius.
Hey, that's me.
Faith is like, I had sex with Xander. If Buffy had sex with Xander, that puts me closer to Buffy.
I think I like that analysis. However, I think Faith just brings it up because she wants to be talking about sex.
Oh, but both. It's a win-win. It's a double-edged sex talk.
I was going to say double-edged sword would have worked.
Well, yeah, because I guess there are swords. Okay, fine.
So I wrote an erotic novel 56 seconds into the viewing. Are you ready?
Great. I'm so ready.
What are friends for? All this sweating nightly side-by-side action you never put in for a little after hours. I spelled that UNH.
That noise.
Yeah. The way I said it or the way that...
Both.
I tried to read it verbatim from my spelling.
That was the longest erotic novel you've ever written
on this show. I don't know. I'm not
sure. Pretty long.
But
it's
could be one of the best.
I'm surprised you didn't include, a epilogue in your erotic novel. This isn't a Tupperware party.
Excuse me, Jenny, but that's definitely not a part of my erotic novel.
I guess we have different concepts of what's appropriate to include in an erotic novel.
Christine Tuna, back in our live taping over at Nerd Melt, said that perhaps she and I would collaborate on a zine of erotic novels.
Kristen strikes out on her own without me.
And I just want to say to you, Christine, if you're listening, that Faith is wearing leopard print pants in this scene, so if that could be worked into your drawing.
Yes, please.
I would really appreciate
it. Beautiful.
There's also the first little like tease of Bad Girl in this scene where Buffy is like, okay, I'm going to count down from three or whatever. And she's like, three, and Faith is gone, or one, whatever she starts with.
Yeah,
Faith is already over the edge.
Faith, the rules of 1, 2, 3, go do not apply to Faith Lehane.
I'm not sure that any rules apply to
Faith. I'm not sure either.
So then we go to the mayor's office.
This is the best.
Yeah, the mayor, so when we talked to Joanna this season, Joanna was like, you know, I really feel like you're not giving the mayor as much excitement as the mayor is due. And for me, part of it has been like, I know I love the mayor, but I don't exactly remember. Mm. And we try to, stay with the where we are. But now we're really getting into it. Now, like, this is a great episode for
this
why
is
the mayor rules.
A great episode for the male ruling. And this scene in particular is a great Cliff's Notes for our sort of like cabinet of villains here, right? We've got Mayor Wilkins equals family circus with a snake inside.
That PJ.
Mr. Trick equals Marmaduke because nobody can tell Marmaduke what to do. That's Mr. Trick's kind of dog. And Alan likes to read Kathy, which is so great.
It is. It's so great.
I have a question. Have the antibacterial wipes always been stored in the dark arts closet?
Here's the thing. I have a feeling that there are many places in that office that...
Just every drawer and every door opens onto...
A sanitizing cloth
of some kind. Okay,
I don't think the mayor is going to... Like, for heaven's sake, what if the cabinet was jammed and he couldn't get in there? Then he'd just have to have dirty hands?
Oh, no.
Not acceptable.
So, speaking of acceptable, Willow got into every school.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You and I were just talking about college applications, not apropos of... this episode or really anything, but it reminded me of our conversation.
I applied to one school.
School. Do you know, like, did you apply to one school because you were like, I will go to the school or nothing? Or did you apply to one school because it was like $100 or $50 to apply and like that was your budget?
It was like a little bit of both. There were sort of like three schools I was aware of that had a program that I wanted to get into. And one of them was a state school, which I had a better chance of being able to sort of afford or pay off over time. Mm-hmm. And the other two were like, $40,000, $50,000 a year.
Right.
So like those were deterrents. And of course the application fee was also a deterrent.
Which is like really fucked up. That was kind of what our conversation led to when we talked about it the other day. I was like, because I applied to 6 colleges.
That is so many schools.
It's
but also that's probably the norm. That's probably
it was probably maybe a little over the norm these days. But like then I was like, damn, that's like it's like really messed up. I mean, paying for college in and of itself is kind of messed up. But paying to apply to the college seems it's almost as if this society that we live in is designed to keep more wealthy people at the top.
That doesn't sound like a thing.
No, that sounds...
Speaking of classism, Cordelia is a piece of shit. Cordelia is such an asshole. And then Cordelia is classist. And then Xander is misogynistic. And then Cordelia is classist again.
Oh, is Cordelia classist twice? I think I only wrote down that Hookerware and then my dad has a job. I didn't get the first classist.
Well, I guess she's just sort of like making a comment about how he's a loser and he's going to keep being a loser and he's like planning on being a loser. So maybe that, I mean, take that as you
Cordelia will. Cordelia really hasn't been like... given, we're coming off the Zeppo where like she was super one-dimensional, but like I feel like in this episode too,
I feel like most of the time since they broke up,
yes,
like there's just been a lot of this, a lot of them like clawing at each other, and I'm ready for something new.
I am too. I would like the depth and the layers back for my Cordelia. Yeah. Do you hear me, 1999 writer's room?
Ha.
Okay. So also Oz has black hair.
Yeah, just out of nowhere.
And I'm pretty sure, spoiler alert, not really, but I'm pretty sure this is just for this one episode.
Yeah, maybe one or two.
Yeah, it's like black hair, Oz, what? And then it's back to normal.
So many delightful things in this episode. It's Wesley Windham Price.
Oh my God.
New watcher?
New watcher.
Is he evil?
Wesley Windham Price, listen, you've got two Wesley fans in the room here, and he like comes, he just enters brilliantly. Like the first thing he's saying when we enter the scene is, I've faced two vampires, actually, albeit in controlled circumstances.
I mean, he's so over the top and ridiculous, and I feel like Alexis Denisov is just like crushing it.
Yes.
It's like, ugh. Oh, he's just so, I just want to squish him.
Yes, I do too. And so did Allison Hannigan, as a matter of fact. All of you probably know this, but, you know, Alexis Denisov and Allison Hannigan met on the set of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So we are not only watching the Sexual Tension Award episode of the series for Faith and Buffy, but we are also watching the Sexual Tension Award for Allison Hannigan and Alexis Denisov, because that's where it began. And according to my Buffy trivia, Allison Hannigan was super into Alexis and wanted to date him. And he was like, I can't date a coworker.
Far too professional.
Far too professional. So, yeah, he was like, well, I've only fought two vampires under controlled circumstances. And they were friends for like over a year before they got together.
Aww.
Sounds like someone else I know.
Wow, gotta go.
Just saying, I tried to date Jenny for
sometimes
a while,
it's cool
and Jenny
to
was
be
like,
friends with people.
I'm so professional, I couldn't possibly.
Yeah, it's like, couldn't possibly date a coworker.
Anyhow, I want to talk more about this scene, but before we go full into it, I just want to call back to the last scene because Willow has a comment about chemistry being like witchcraft, just less newt, which I love, and I put in the category of Hellmath.
Wow.
Hellmath.
Amazing.
Okay, so back to Wesley. I want to give a special shout out to the shoulder move that Wesley does
in
the scene where he's like, a good slayer is a cautious slayer. It's just like, this is so ridiculous.
The move is so awkward, and yet it looks like exactly what this character would do naturally, which
yeah,
is
totally
brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's so like weirdly stiff and proper.
And makes Giles look like Giles is back to his Ripper days.
Yeah, exactly. He makes Giles look like Ripper.
Giles is just being normal Giles, and we're like, that guy's so cool.
Yeah, he's a cool older guy.
Yeah, so we get a load of Wesley. Buffy gets a load of Wesley. Then Faith comes in and gets a load of Wesley. And is like, no thanks.
Which is amazing.
And just leaves.
Reminds me of that scene with Cordelia where she's like, tact is just not saying things, whatever she says.
Also, there's like, we get all the backstory in this scene, which, you know, Balthazar wants an amulet.
Wesley
thinks that Balthazar is dead already.
Yep.
You know, he knows about swords, yada,
God,
yada,
it's like,
yada.
Who cares?
Right, who cares? I know, that's how I feel about any note in my entire watch that isn't about Faith and Buffy. But also, something to note, just in general about this relationship is, I give a little bit of credit. Wesley is a pain in the ass. He's kind of a nightmare and whatever, but I give him credit sticking, it's hard. Like, he is coming into a situation that is about as awkward as it could be.
Totally. New manager taking over for fired dad.
Right? It's almost like I used to be a nanny, and most times when I was a nanny, it would just be me and the kids. But then I had, like, a few jobs where the mom was like, I'm going to be here, but, like, I just want you to take care of the kids. And it was always, like, extra special awkward because, like, how do you really – you know, when somebody else's actual parent is there, you're, like, unsure of your footing. And Wesley isn't. Wesley just goes for it. So credit to Wesley where credit is due.
Yeah, I guess.
But also stop telling Buffy to fetch stuff.
Yeah.
That's got to go, man. Also, like, Wesley and Giles are such odds, and then as soon as the Slayers are out of the room, they, while not looking at each other, take their glasses off, handkerchiefs out, and clean their glasses in sweet, sweet unison.
That's beautiful. We need to find that gif is what we need to do, or make it ourselves.
Yeah.
We're Slayers, girlfriend. The Chosen Two.
How many times does Faith call Buffy girlfriend?
At least three.
At least three,
at
right?
At least three that I counted.
It's a lot.
So this is outside school, and they're like talking about slaying. My main note is flirt, 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 flirt. Because Faith is just, I mean, Faith is going hard. Tell me if you don't get in a good slay, after a while you don't start itching for some vamp to come by so you can get in a good again.
So, yeah, here's this thing, right? Okay, so in, like, the Anne Rice Interview with the Vampire sort of universe, that's the first time, the first incident I'm aware of that, like, vampires feeding equals sex. Mm. Like, that comparison is sort of, like, made obvious.
Right.
And I feel like this episode is sort of clubbing us over the head with, at least from Faith's perspective, slaying is like sex, which we've,
yes,
it's been hinted at with, like, hungry and horny.
Right. I mean,
previous episodes, but this episode, they are going hard.
I just, like, I feel like that's the seed of this episode, is that the writer of this episode was like, hungry and horny, that's what I'm going to use. Because it's used over and over again to underline the fact that what Faith is after is, and this is complicated. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the song anyway, like the creation of the song for today's episode. And you'll hear it down the line. First, you're going to listen to us talk about Buffy and Faith doing it for a while. But when we were conceptualizing the song, it was like, we want it to be about, like, bad girls, because there's the through line of the episode that's sort of like, sexuality, right? That it's I mean, this is not just two queer women reading between lines here. These are the lines. Like, this is straight up what's happening. And so there's that line, which is like, oh, it's like, it's you know, it's different and it's not the norm, mm-hmm, and it's, mm-hmm, ladies wanting to kiss ladies. It's dangerous, like dark in the shadows, like the, like, pulp lesbian novels, right?
Sure.
And there's a part of that that we love, but it's lined up with Faith also breaking a bunch of other laws and rules and what have you. And so when we were conceptualizing the song and having initial conversations around it, I was like, well, this is tricky because, like, we want the song to be all sexual innuendo. But then it's like, is the message – because the message of the show is, like, you can't cross those lines, and the show means – that you can't cross.
You can't kill a man.
You can't kill a man. But because it's laid over this parallel of, like, Faith's desire for Buffy, the message of, like, well, you can't go too far with that because you'll cross a line.
Right,
is
right.
Super complicated. And I don't think that, I mean, maybe that's rose-tinted glasses of me to not think that that was intentional. I mean, not intentional, but, like, you know, I think that what it is that our common perception of sexuality when it isn't heterosexuality is, like, dark and dangerous, especially in, like, 1990. I mean, still today, but
right,
1999,
right, right.
You know, like, it was still like, do you talk about it? Do you not? Like,
right.
That kind of a vibe. So it's interesting to me, and I love it. I love that it's, like, not right over the head and you're like, oh,
right,
my God. But I also feel like there's complicated stuff that happens because of that overlay. So I just wanted to say that.
Yes. You know what I want to talk about?
What?
Wait. Stop. Think.
No, no, no.
It's a manhole. Tight space, no escape, 6 against 2. Not unlike 3 against 1.
And there might be more, so come on.
You're just going to go down there. That's your plan.
Who said I had a plan? I don't know how many's down there, but I want to find out. And I'll know when I land. If you don't come in after me, I might die.
Fucking, I don't know how many's down there, but I want to find out. And I'll know when I land. And if you don't come in after me, I might die. Hop. Ah! Listen.
Yes.
There's so many, like, I just want to, like, frame. I want to print out the script of this episode and frame every page of it and hang it all over our house.
Yeah,
out of order.
As the other person who lives in this house, I'm in.
Ha!
Yeah, so this is the scene where Buffy is in the crypt. She's like, got the amulet. And then she's like, oh no, men are coming. And so she jumps into the crypt. And while they're looking at her, she pulls the cover over her head, but no yeah, one notices. And then Faith is there. Faith is just like 4 paces
Boo,
behind her. You know, Faith is like,
yeah,
I'm not coming.
Just kidding.
So then we go to Wesley and Giles again. I do like the cutaways to them, like, sort of.
Right, right. Oh, my God. Wesley reading, like, Giles' early Watcher's diary entries where he's like, oh, this girl butchers the English language and she's insolent and da-da-da.
Yes. Now, okay, so.
Oh, my God.
So the girls.
Are you about to talk about what I think you're about to talk about?
I am. The girls jump down the hole after each other or whatever. Then they're in this fight. And they're fighting the, what do you call these guys?
Medieval times vampires?
Yeah, but they have a name, Illuminati.
Medieval times vampires?
Aren't they like, okay.
Illuminati, I believe.
Illuminati, not to be confused with Illuminati. Mm. Okay, medieval times vampires, they're fighting them. And like Faith is like up against the wall and she, oh my God, something's going to happen. So Buffy throws the stake across the room and it's like. Oh, my God.
I can't.
Jenny, do you need to take a time out?
I'm usually fine, but this is too much.
Her legs, Jenny's legs are, like, crossed. And then, like, if you put your right leg over your left leg and then take your right foot and tuck it behind your left foot so that it's, like, wrapped around itself. That's how she's sitting
I'm
right
all
now.
Wound up.
Literally. So anyhow, Buffy throws the stake and it's like, whoo, 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 and it stakes the vampire. And then there's this close up. Now you listen here. If you missed this,
you gotta go look at it.
You have to go back. The way she looks at Buffy,
the fucking like eyebrow raise of thanks and perhaps of I'll be thanking you later.
Do you think?
You know what I mean?
Jenny, do you think that you would be open to us each trying to recreate that look? That thing?
Absolutely not, under no circumstances.
God, come on. What can we get them to do? If our listeners do something for you, will you do this for us?
No.
Seriously, nothing.
No, I am Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I am not Faith the Vampire
Slayer. I just want
Slayer.
You to like try to recreate the
There's face. No recreating it. It is a isolated, it's like fucking Halley's Comet, except way more rare. And you just have to accept that. Just a regular person like myself can't fucking wake up in the morning, brush their teeth, and then try to make that face.
That's exactly the fun of it. So don't worry, everyone, because I'm married to Jenny and I can get her to do anything. And we'll be both trying to recreate that look for our social media accounts.
I hate you, and I want to.
Good business people would say if we reach 6,000 Twitter followers, but not us. We just want to have fun.
Yeah, we do. Except I don't want to have that particular kind of fun.
Well, you're going to have it anyway.
I know. Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 visits. So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it.
or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm it. Okay, so then Buffy gets drowned again.
I really hate it when they drown me.
Hate it when they drown me. It's nice the way they edit it, too. They kind of do that same slow-mo that they did in the end of season one, you know? So you're like, oh,
right,
flashback.
Right.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And then tell me you don't get off on this.
It's just like they're in the middle of stuff. Like, this is not the time. Faith? They're
Faith, I think,
busy.
Believes it to be the...
Yeah, I guess Faith is this is precisely the time.
No, you know, we should talk about Faith in a general way.
We totally should because, I mean, there's so much to say, of course. In particular, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the conversations that we were having with Jess Abbott while we were writing the song. Jess brought to our attention, you know, the idea that sort of like once Faith is on the scene, everyone's like, oh, now Buffy, like sweet golden Buffy, can like go to college, can go away, can do whatever she wants. Faith obviously doesn't care about her own life. She can just become the Slayer in Sunnydale now. Like Faith dropped out of high school. Faith will do whatever we say.
Yeah, and Faith, like...
And Faith is still living at a motel, and she's a child.
Like, that's, I think...
teenager.
That is what Jess said. Like, Jess just, like, casually said those words. Like, and she's a child. And Jenny and I were like, yeah, she's a fucking child. And, like, no one is taking care of her. No one is helping her out. And
who is her legal guardian at this stage?
Very few people are believing in her or even pushing her. It's like... You see that she cares. You see.
They treat her like she's like a 30-year-old adult. They're like, well, you know, Faith, she's just like off on one of her walkabouts. Nobody's like, hey, that 16 or 17-year-old that we're sort of responsible for, like, may or may not be alive right now.
Right. And, you know, certainly you don't expect that from like any of her peers. I wouldn't expect anyone, you know, Buffy or Willow or, you know, they're all the same age, give or take. And
but
so,
Giles, what the fuck?
But Joyce,
right,
what
Joyce,
the fuck? Giles, Wesley, come on.
Spike.
Gwendolyn Post.
Angel.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. Spike and Angel. Just like people who are adults,
yeah,
letting this happen and not stepping in and not sort of advising Buffy or, you know, any of the others to kind of step in on their behalf or anything. Just,
yeah,
it's just a lot. And, you know, as we see, this tragic thing happens, but we'll get there. But, oh boy, do we have some places to go first, don't we?
Science class.
Science class.
So there's like, there's a few things. First of all, the concept of the honor system test, the teacher's leaving them alone for no reason and is other than so that Buffy can leave class.
We did a, if you're a patron of ours, you know that we do Buffy watches and for all of our patrons. And the most recent Buffy watch that we did was for Bad Girls. And I think I remember somebody in the chat. So we watched the episode all together with anyone who's in our secret Facebook group. And somebody in the chat, I remember saying something like, well, you know, that teacher's got a cigarette to smoke, like classic move where the teacher's just like, get me the fuck out of here, give these like, they didn't like, the teacher didn't care at all if they cheated or not.
Yeah.
She was just like, bye.
Yeah, so Buffy's going like on and on and on and on and on and on.
Yes, I want to say something about
please
this because I know once we get past Buffy going on and on, Jenny's gonna spiral.
There's no turning back. Yeah,
right. Jenny's just gonna be sucked out of the door. So I just, it called to mind something for me because this whole episode is just super queer. And Buffy is sitting in class and she's talking to Willow. She's trying to explain to Willow. And there's a huge disconnect between Willow and Buffy in this episode.
Mm.
And it's framed, and I think that this is valid also, that it's framed in, you know, Buffy is breaking rules and is sort of like acting out and Willow isn't, and it's putting a divide between them.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think we can apply this queer lens to it. And it just reminded me of when Buffy is saying to Willow, like, you know, I actually don't think you can understand of what it feels like oftentimes when you are a queer person and you are trying to, or decide not to try to, explain what your experience is like. And this, of course, applies to across race, across class. Like, our experiences when we speak to other people who have not lived those experiences can be really hard to communicate. And you can feel really isolated.
Right, but also, like, on the flip side of that, like, I feel like Willow is trying to relate to her on a very, like, legitimate,
yes,
supernatural level, and is just getting, like, shut down out of hand.
Totally. I guess for me it resonated, because I still have these moments where I'm like, you just wouldn't understand. I get really angry, you know? And the anger is valid. It comes from being in a world for my whole life that really wasn't set up for people to easily understand me. Mm-hmm. And that can be very angering. But sometimes that anger and that isolation can manifest in me not actually noticing when I could relate to someone who doesn't have the exact
right.
So there are two sides to it, but yeah. I just thought it was a cool thing to talk about. And it underlines for me too this experience, why spaces that we share with other people who do share our identities are so precious and special and mm-hmm. important. You know, that when we're like, hey, this is a queer-only space, and people might be like, but why?
Right.
Well, it's like, because in that space, you don't really have to explain a lot of the foundational stuff you might have to explain. And I'm putting a lot on this scene, but this episode has a lot in it, so I feel it's fair.
Yeah, I mean, so many,
like,
sides.
Whatever.
So many sides. Well, you know, there's only one side to Xander's eye twitch that occurs oh, right. every time somebody says the word faith.
It's a great moment.
Pretty great.
It's, yeah, Xander.
Well done. Good eye twitch.
Yeah, Nicholas Brendan really knocks it out of the park on this. We got to give him some credit, because it's good. And when he's like, you know, some people care about school. He's like, oh, it's just a really good delivery.
Yeah. Oh, do they?
It's a really good delivery.
Oh,
so,
boy. And then along comes
my ability to take notes was entirely lost at this moment. I'm just going to try to read you what I have written. This is all I wrote from the moment that the knock on the window happened until they're at the bronze dancing. Okay. And we'll go back and discuss all these things in detail. But my full notes for that whole series of events is knock, knock, what? Then I drew a heart with an arrow in it. The hand sweep. Come on. That's it. It's all my notes.
Yeah, well, that's one way to look at it all. Sure. Of course. Another way to look at it is, did you see that? I don't think I ever responded to this season the way I'm responding to it on this watch.
Well, you've never gotten to watch it together with thousands of people who feel the exact same that you do.
Yeah. It's a lot. I mean, the most maybe used GIF of the series
is
Faith fogging up the window, drawing a little heart, putting a little stake through it, and then again with the fucking eyebrow. If
her eyebrows are unbelievable, Emmy goes to
Eliza Dushku. That's exactly what I was gonna say. If there was an Emmy for eyebrow use, absolutely, Eliza Dushku would have won it for this episode.
Good God. Yeah, it's really incredible. And also, one of the first times that we rewatched this episode for the podcast, I was like, holy shit, all three of these scenes happen within, like, just a few seconds. Like, they're just, it's like, boom, she's at the window. Boom, there's the scene with the light behind them with the stakes. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, they're dancing in the bronze.
Yeah. Okay,
great.
Oh my God, again with the hey girlfriend bad time? And the, like, found a nest. Let's get out of here. Buffy just, like, climbs out the window and leaves school.
Yeah.
Willow's like, huh?
Willow's like, what in the hell?
Oh,
what
my God.
What in the queer storyline is happening?
Yeah, yeah. And then we get, like, closed doors inside of a crypt and that, like, great string sort of, like, slow slide that sounds so creepy. And then they bust through the doors and there's sunlight and they're silhouetted. And they're like, quip. Unison stake draw. Hell yeah. Wow. What a great thing to be able to watch. What a time to be alive.
That's like, because there are three gifts that I see, and maybe my the gifts I see are a little biased because I'm a queer woman.
Sure.
But the gifts I see the most from this series are Faith with the heart, The two of them walking through that door with the light behind them and them dancing at the bronze.
Oh my God. Okay, so now we're like, we're really at peak. We're like on the top of the peak of Mount fucking
Sexy.
Slayer fucking tension. So now that we're up here, it's probably time for Kate Leth to plant the flag.
I mean, listen, if Kate Leth lives anywhere, it's at the peak of this mountain.
Yes.
So we just asked Kate for just a regular fashion watch. Kate, can you give us
something,
just a medium watch, whatever you think. And Kate delivered the following to our email inboxes, and we deceased. We're deceased. This is the ghost.
We are the ghosts of Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, sounds
killed
a lot like
by Buffy Fashion Watch.
Yeah, just a little more opaque, but really the same deal.
So you've been warned. This may be the last Buffy Fashion Watch you ever hear, because it may kill you dead.
It may. Here we go.
It's time for our friend Kate.
Hello and welcome to Buffy Fashion Watch. There's so much to say, I don't know where to start. With Faith at the windowpane, drawing a heart, her nails, her expression, the thumb ring she wears, the way she delights in Bee's curious stares, the snakeskin, the pleather, the black denim jacket, her grin stealing weapons and causing a racket, those dark crimson lips when they're not painted brown, beguiling her partner to take on the town. Poor Buffy, sweet Buffy, entranced by her looks, is dressed like she'd rather be drowning in books. This episode has her in soft baby pink until Faith's "Hey, girlfriend" is launched with a wink. Then out comes the leather, the black chunky heels, the loaded exchanges on how slaying feels. Just dancing to Curve at the bronze late at night to work out the rush they're both feeling post-fight. Not Angel, not Xander, no boys are allowed. Not Wesley, not Willow, 'cause three is a crowd. Is Buffy's descent ill-advised? Sure, in theory. But if you'll attend me, I'll pose you a query. Would any among us be better equipped to argue if Faith beckoned us to a crypt? Or would, like our heroine, we simply fall? Think on it. I'll be waiting here at the mall.
That was our friend Kate. She gave you the Buffy fashion update.
Kate, I love you. Kate, you're perfect. Kate.
Wow.
A fashion watch.
There, now, now. Peroxide would still work for Kate.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I can't handle it. I can't take it. I can't possibly continue to live in this world.
We bow down before ye. We are just humble ghosts.
Humble ghosts.
Just humble ghosts at your service, Kate Leth.
Thank
Holy
you, Kate.
Shit.
Thanks, Kate, for being so amazing. Okay, so listen, about the sexy dancing at the bronze.
Yeah, what about it, Jenny?
When did the bronze get those flashy lights? When did the bronze start playing like off-brand Prodigy songs? And when did the bronze acquire this like pod of very hygienic dancing boy bots that swarm around Buffy
I
and
think
Faith?
Somebody tipped them off to this episode. They were like, hey guys, there's going to be some step girl on girl
next
dancing.
Week. So, that's definitely the most dancing that the bronze has seen.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some sexy dancing, but
but that's like the highest energy sexy dancing.
Yes,
for
I mean,
sure.
I think it might be the only strobe light we've seen at the
probably,
bronze,
right? Yeah, I feel like it never gets above mid tempo in the bronze.
Right. You know who never gets above mid tempo?
Angel.
It's Angel, who like walks in and looks at what's happening, and I just would like to frame that moment as well.
Yeah, like, it's very like, I seem to have stumbled into a parallel universe.
He's like, all of my senses tell me that something is happening here, and yet I know that couldn't be happening here. Then Buffy sort of like goes over to Angel and jumps on him, wraps her legs around him.
Yep. And she's like, don't worry about all those boys. Ugh, boys, gross. And then, as if that wasn't enough of a party at the bronze, oh, look, it's Wesley.
Oh, my God. And Wesley is, like, as flummoxed as Wesley could possibly be. He doesn't know what's going on. No one is telling him anything. Buffy's like, oh, the amulet? Just give it to this guy. Which, Wesley, why do you give it to him? You don't even know who he is.
He doesn't even have a choice. She takes it out of his jacket and hands it to Angel.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But you'd think he would be like,
I mean, Wesley doesn't have the power of, like, as we see really soon,
right.
Like, he does not have the spine.
But you'd think he would at least ask the question.
Well, it all happens so fast.
It does. He's very confused.
He's in a youth culture environment.
Buffy oh my runs God. Over to get Faith, pulls her away, and what does Faith say, Jenny?
Oh my God, she says, call me, and while pointing to every boy seven times, which is so great. So great as she's pulled off the dance floor. And then we meet Balthazar, who it turns out is alive, and his head minion is Vincent Vaughn, the medieval times vampire.
Right, totally, 100%. Balthazar is, you know, most known for his famous line, that's my amulet!
He loves to scream various things.
He does. So Balthazar is a villain that sits in a jacuzzi of hot boiling liquid that people spoon over his body, which is certainly, he's related to the master. I will tell you that right now.
Oh, they have,
they're
they
cousins.
Have similar.
Oh, yeah.
Their mouths are very similar.
Are bad. They are
he
bad.
He also has what somebody in our Buffy watch dubbed mutton chomps, which yeah, are yeah. like teeth, sort of, where like mutton chops would normally be.
Horrible. Just horrible. He's a very, very specifically horrible demon. But something that I brought up a little bit when we did our live watch is that, and I thought this before Buffy comes in and quips her the first joke about Balthazar, which is like, that guy could really use a Stairmaster, which is like, something's happening here. Like, there are things that definitely will always drive me nuts, such as teeth that are pointy and a tiny little mouth that makes me want to die, you know? Always will make me want to die.
Yeah.
But there's a play that's happening here where being fat is also associated with being unclean, being lazy, being, you know, all of these super negative stereotypes that are often assigned to being fat.
Right.
And in this case, it's quite literally demonized and poked fun at. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like, well, this demon, he's bad because he kills people, but like he wouldn't be as bad if he wasn't as fat.
Why did they have to take this episode,
which is
beautiful,
full
of everything that I love? It's nearly perfect. It's 98% composed of things that make me very happy. But then there's this sliver of fat shaming and cruel stereotyping.
Yeah, it's not great. And it's also something that I think goes very unnoticed, which is why we want to call attention to it.
Right.
That you're
right.
Sort of like, the guy, like he's sitting in that tub and he's like I think a lot of people's minds are not trained to be aware of what's happening here. Because, you know, the fat shaming is a thing that happens, but it's also something that it's something that's really perpetuated by the media. You know, the media is a big hand in giving us, you know, joke after joke, character after character.
Sure.
That does these kinds of things. So it's certainly not isolated to this episode of Buffy by a long shot.
But because it's here,
yes,
we
see it.
To note it.
We note it. Now, Balthazar, Buffy and Faith see Balthazar, and Faith is like, you know, this would be better if we just had...
Oh, look, a bow and arrow store.
It's like a sporting goods store?
It's a sporting goods store. And Buffy's like, if only they were open. And Faith's like, they're open for me.
Also,
guitar solo.
The music is like, boom, boom. Criminals doing criminal things.
Yeah. And Faith introduces Buffy to one of her most memorable philosophies.
Yes.
Want, take, have. And Buffy's like, oh, I get this. Want, take, have, get arrested? And Faith's like, no. Yeah. You're doing it wrong.
You're doing it all wrong. So also, Faith has a great line in the scene. The cops show up and they're like, oh, shit. And of course, Buffy's like just terrified.
Of course.
Faith is scared, but Faith is quipping. Faith
oh
is like,
God.
It's like Buffy to demons is Faith to cops, you know?
Like, she's just amazing.
She's just full of quips.
Yeah, Faith never quips at demons.
No,
she?
She's got all the quips in her heart for all the cops in the land.
Yeah, yeah.
She's not having it.
Oh my God.
The cops
like spread him and she's like, you wish.
Yeah, and then I like him. He's Butch. Oh, yeah, you like Butch things? Okay, great. Just
Then we, the cops are taking him downtown. They're like, what are you girls loading up for, on your arsenal for your girl gang?
Yes, this is great. So I'm reading, our secret Patreon people do wonderful things. And we've mentioned before they have a book club. And the first book that they're reading for their book club is a book called The Power, where suddenly women develop this electrical current that they can discharge through their palms. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you would imagine what might happen to the power dynamic in the world if that happened.
Right.
So just watching this scene reminded me of what I'm reading in this book, where they're like in the back and the cops are like, what are you, one of those girl gangs? And they're like, and Faith is like, yeah, we're called the Slayers. And they're like, ha ha ha. And then the girls are like, zap, you know,
or in this case, foom.
Yeah. And I would like to give a particular jingle to this moment, Jenny, because I think that our Slayers, as the white male cops chuckle to themselves about the silly girl Slayers in the front seat, and they say, ha, 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 zap. I think they're smashing something.
The patriarchy!
You know, you can only smash the patriarchy double if you're not only smashing the patriarchy, but you're sleeping with the lady friend that you're smashing the patriarchy with.
Goodness.
Double smash.
Wow.
Bam.
Wow.
Boom.
Speaking of double smash, you know what I can't understand? The three very popular gifts from this episode, I don't understand how they're not in a quartet with a gif of Buffy and Faith uncuffing each other.
Hell yeah!
A+.
You can make that gift.
Jenny Owen Young's Voter Choice Award best gift that doesn't exist. Buffy and Faith
uncuffing each other.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So, okay, so they uncuff each other, and then we cut to the kitchen where Buffy, okay, so fine. Buffy's reading the newspaper because she's like, oh man, is anybody going to know that two girls flipped a cop car? Oh man, oh man. But what I really want to talk about in this scene is that this episode is called Bad Girls, and I feel like a little nod was given to Joyce Summers.
Wow.
Who's dressed in her red robe.
Yes.
In the kitchen. She walks over and she says, hey, you want to break our diet today? I just thought it was really funny and sweet and wonderful that Joyce got to be included in the Bad Girls Club.
She just wants to make some naughty waffles. Don't we all?
Don't we all, Joyce?
So then we get to see the mayor taking a quick photo with the Boy Scouts.
Yes. And he says, they're so cute, I could just eat them up.
Great, great. Mm-hmm. Shortly before, Vincent Vaughn, the medieval times vampire, stumbles out of the liquor cabinet.
Yes.
And tries to kill the mayor.
Right. And there's a moment in here that Jenny has noticed, and probably most of you have noticed, but I hadn't noticed it until this watch. Because, so we're going to get to Alan. Obviously, we're going to talk to Jackpot, and again, we're going to talk about Alan in detail. But this moment that happens where Alan is standing in the corner and the guy has gotten in that cabinet somehow, and the mayor's like, I just can't imagine how he would have gotten into that cabinet. And Alan is like flummoxed and flustered.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always thought it was just a little bit more unclear as to what was happening with Alan's character. But now I feel like
it really feels like Alan is having second thoughts and looking for a way out.
Yes. So just noting that, pointing it out.
So Willow made a protection spell that smells nice.
It's so sad.
But Buffy doesn't care because she's too busy with her new friend Faith.
Yeah, it's really sad. Willow can't come. Poor Willow. And Faith like barges in and is like, you ready, Bee?
I'm here in my puffy vest.
I'm here looking like Faith. Ah. And Willow is so sad. And the last little moment of the scene
of Willow being like, stupid.
No.
Willow!
Give Willow her jingle. She deserves it. She's gone through a whole episode of being ignored.
Who knows the square root of 1225? Willow, who's gentle of heart and nimble with a hard drive. Willow, 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 Willow.
I don't understand why Willow and Buffy and Faith can't all go do stuff together.
What are you trying to say, Jenny?
Just, I mean, one is blonde, one is brunette, and one is a redhead. It only makes sense.
What a great spinoff series.
So Ripper's Angels.
Copyrighted. It's copyright. Yeah. That's how you copyright something, right?
You just say copyright on your podcast.
Yeah. Faith has another line here. How do you feel about getting some ribs after
God.
She's like, hey, I don't know if you remember. Like, what she means is like, I don't know if you remember what I said back in like earlier this season about like getting hungry and horny. But like, what I'm saying is like, do you want to eat some ribs? So like, what I also mean is like, do you want to do it?
Listen. Yes. Okay. Also her new like, the continuation of this thing that's where slayers are like, I love a weapon that I have to load repeatedly with one projectile at a time. Faith's new camouflage compound bow.
Yeah, it's cool though. It looks.
It's just impractical.
But like, you know, maybe with being a slayer, you want like even more of a challenge, you know? It's like add an element of difficulty.
That's an aspect.
So Faith and Buffy are going through the alley, and Faith makes a really good observation. She, like, Buffy's like, I don't know if we're going to be able to take them all. And Faith's like, I mean, if they keep coming one at a time,
yeah,
we'll be fine.
It's basically a video game.
It's a weird tactic by the Balthazar dudes to just be like, okay, you 5 feet down, you 5 more feet down.
I just feel like if vampires could get organized, like a slayer would never live more than a few days.
Yeah, well.
Just like get all of yourselves together.
Maybe that could be said for all of the evil in the world, you know?
Wow.
Take them down, take them down. Anyway, so Faith is slaying one Balthazar dude, and then Buffy's slaying another Balthazar dude, and they're like, pow, pow, pow. And then they round the corner, and this is really important, the details of this scene, right? Because they've established a pattern. They're
right.
Kill, boom, another one pops out. Kill, boom, another one pops out. Kill.
They've got their rhythm.
Then, boom, Alan is in the alley. We don't know why. And Alan grabs one of their shoulders, I think Faith, but maybe.
I think he grabs Faith's shoulder, yeah.
I think Faith, but either way, he grabs a shoulder. And so, of course,
yeah, Faith reflexively.
Reflexively, instinctively whips around.
In the heat of the moment.
And stakes poor Alan.
Poor gentle Alan, who seems to have been on his way to share information about the mayor, if you ask me.
If you ask Jack Plotnick, I think he may have some similar hopes. And I don't know if you realize this, Jenny, but I got to ask Jack Plotnick.
You did?
I sure did.
Oh my God.
So I think now would be a great time for us to hear this interview. Jack is, as you are about to find out, a delight upon delights. He is a delight on Delight Mountain, is what he is. And I was so excited. I went over to his apartment here in Los Angeles, and we had a good chat. And you're going to hear some really fun stories. So let's get into it. So hello and welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer. Thank you so much for talking to me.
I am so happy to be here, Kristen. This is just so fun to have you here in my apartment. And we're talking about Buffy.
Right? Oh. I was going to say, when I walked in, I felt immediately at home. You'll be hearing this after the holidays, but I want you to know that inside of this apartment, there is an elf on the shelf. There are four Christmas trees. So it's pretty exciting. Very much in the spirit.
And I'm a Jew. But...
But, incredible.
And by the way, two of the Christmas trees are props for a show I'm putting up, but the big Christmas tree is totally mine, because I'm gay. I love glitter. I love Christmas. I grew up in a very Christian-y neighborhood, and I grew up in all of those choirs. And so when I hear these songs, just brings me right back to childhood.
It's so nice.
It's a better
Christmas
way.
Spirit.
I'm sorry. Christmas is just better than Hanukkah. It's got better songs, better characters, better gifts. So...
Anyhow.
So I'm Jack Plotnick.
You're Jack Plotnick.
Yes, and I portrayed in the show, I portrayed the deputy mayor of Sunnydale.
A character beloved to my heart and to so many people.
That is so sweet of you. It's beloved to my heart, too. I treasure the memories, and to me, it was a huge honor. Yeah, huge.
Yeah, I mean, I can see
why. To be on
the
show and to have a role where... You know, I had, you know, some little impact.
Yes, I think it's a pivotal role. It's a role that people remember.
Well, it's the only Is it the only human that a Slayer killed?
I believe so. Yeah.
For certainly the first big one.
Some of the lines are wiggly, but this is, I mean, that is right. That's the plot line, especially of this episode is, wow, we've crossed a line. Faith specifically. But tell us, start at the beginning. How did you wind up?
Start at the very beginning.
I queued you up for that.
Have a beautiful voice.
So how did you come to the
show? Well, I had just arrived in LA only about maybe a year or two earlier, and I think this was probably the first dramatic series I booked. So that was a really big deal for me.
Yeah.
Honestly, when I got the audition, I did not know the show. It only, you know, I wasn't watching a lot of TV at the time, and it was just not on my radar. But what was very exciting was that it was a drama, and it was a really classy casting director, and I was super excited to go in. And when I booked the role, I was over the moon.
Yeah.
When I arrived on set, you know, it was a very strange thing to walk through Sunnydale and not know what it was. And P.S., by the way, later I became the hugest Buffy fan. So just know, to me, it's top three greatest shows of all time, to me, in my opinion. But anyway, so I'm walking through Sunnydale, like, having no idea what this place is, you know? And one thing I remember is one of my first sort of reactions to being on the set. I think it was the school set. I was walking through the hallways and just noticing that the sets were not very expensive, and it almost looked, and I, not to put it down, but it almost looked like kind of like my high school musical sets were like kids kind of painted on bricks.
Yeah.
But what the show was so smart about is that they didn't overspend on the sets. Like, for instance, I did Glee a couple years ago, and they throw money into the fire with those sets. I mean, it's stupid how much money they put into those sets. They build them like they're a real place, and you don't need to do that. And what Joss was smart about in putting on the show is that he didn't overspend the sets, because what he did was he got the very best lighting designer. And it's really, the truth about film is it's so much about lighting, and that lighting guy knows what he's doing.
Wow.
And so they were smart about that, because it's all about the lighting and not the sets necessarily.
So some of that caused more questions in my brain. First of all, you said, top three. Buffy is one of your top three TV shows.
Number one is Mad Men. Number two is Breaking Bad.
Thank you very much. That was my exact question. I want to know, I haven't seen either of those shows, and Buffy is a top ranking show for me. So I'm going to have to put those on my list.
You really must.
I
made a movie called Space Station 76. That is, if you like Mad Men, please check out my movie, because you will love it. It stars Patrick Wilson, Matt Bomer, Liv Tyler, Jerry O'Connell. It's set in the future as we had imagined it in the 1970s.
Wow.
So you're on a space station, but everybody's wearing polyester and smoking.
Where can we watch this
you
movie?
You can download this movie anywhere on the internet.
Amazing.
You download movies. So iTunes, Amazon, Google Play. It's called Space Station 76. I made it independently, but Sony Pictures fell in love with it and bought it. So it's now a Sony Pictures film.
Oh, yeah.
And it's my baby. I worked 10 years to get that on
when
screen.
When did it come out?
And it came out beautifully. I got some beautiful reviews. It came out in 2014.
Oh, so recent, pretty recent.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
So tell me, I mean, this is
yes,
you kind
so
of
getting back
this,
to Buffy, yes.
Well, you kind of answered this next question in just talking about your own work and stuff. One of my questions was, did you watch Buffy? Were you a fan? Yes. And are you a fan of fantasy, horror, that genre in general?
Okay, so very first thing I fell in love with was Carol Burnett's shows, and that's what got me, is probably why I'm an actor today. That and Saturday Night Live and this concept of comedic sketches. But at the exact same moment, I was sitting alone in my kitchen every night watching Star Trek, because no one in my family wanted to watch it. And then the movie that I saw more times in my life than any other movie is Empire Strikes Back. And it hit me right at that sweet spot, right before puberty, I believe is the moment that, is, well, boys at least, you get the most obsessed about something, because you haven't discovered sex yet, but your brain is like going crazy, right? So fell in love with Empire Strikes Back, memorized it. So anyway, point is, I was always kind of into these two worlds of comedy, but also science fiction, fantasy. I'm a huge fan. Look, if you love Harry Potter, read the Christopher Pullman series of The Golden Compass. Because it is
favorite.
Harry Potter for adults. So, yeah. So, obviously, I love fantasy and sci-fi. I got into the show the season that Glory arrived.
Ah.
And I fell in love with the show and with that actress. And you know, it's funny, the real actress's baby is in my movie.
Oh my
she
gosh.
plays the baby in my movie. She was so lovely to lend us her baby. But she's a wonderful talent. And anyway, just crazy fell in love with the show. And then I had to go back and rewatch. And then, of course, when my friend Tom got on the show, then that just made my head explode.
So that's a question that I have. We put to Twitter that you were going to be on the show. And so they had some questions for us.
Oh, I love that.
Alexandria from Twitter wrote in and said, did you have a role in getting Tom Link on Buffy, or did you meet after you'd both been on the show?
Well, I wrote the role of Andrew and created it for him, and then I cast him. No, no, I had nothing to do with it.
Breaking.
Yeah, nothing to do with it. You know, I have good taste and they have good taste. So Tom and I were friends, and he got the role of the vampire, and it was adorable. And then they liked him so much, they brought him back for Andrew, which is incredible. And he's so lucky and so talented.
And you all are working together now, currently. You just had a show in December.
Yes, yeah, we just did a holiday show, and I'm in a lot of his. We make videos together where we're arguing, because we love to argue. So we often, if we have a good argument, and we never really mean it, we'll go, oh, we should film this. This is a good argument for your Instagram account. And, you know, he'll call me and say, oh, my God, I'm wearing a cardboard dress. Can you come over and film me in it? I'm like, sure. So, yeah, he's one of my closest friends.
Amazing.
And I adore him.
Yes. We're very excited to get to his part of the show.
Yes.
Around the bend.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Alan, shall we?
Why not?
First of all, this is a Twitter question as well from Fozzie. Fozzie wants to know the backstory. If you made up a backstory for Alan, there's a lot going on. And, you know, there's only a few appearances of Alan, but there's a lot between you and the mayor and in general. So did you make up a backstory for Alan? Did they give you a backstory?
What I do is I just feel like there's a quote from John Lithgow. They said, how do you prepare for a role? And he said, I read the script. And so, you know, I think that me and a lot of actors, what they'll do is they just use their own life, and they just anything from their life that is appropriate to the character, they hold on to, and anything that isn't, you let go of.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I arrive on set and I play the circumstance of the scene. And, you know, Joss is such a good writer. It's not like you need to do a lot of work to figure out why the characters are behaving the way they're behaving. You know, it's clear that, and honestly, it's been a while since I've watched these episodes, but, you know, I think Alan's a sycophant and he's very needy for approval and wants to rise up in the world and is willing to break laws to do it and to work for people who don't necessarily obey the laws. So anyway, to me, that's really delicious and rich and interesting. And so I don't really need to know like what my character had for breakfast or or what, you know, what his grandma's middle name is.
Yes.
Not that I, you know, if you like doing that, feel free. But I try to keep acting really easy, really fun. I actually teach an approach to acting that's based in love and not fear. And I have a free ebook that I share with actors because it's kind of my hobby is to give back to the acting community. But also, it's on my website, which is jackplotnick.com.
Great.
And the free book is called New Thoughts for Actors. But on top of that, my specialty is helping actors let go of anxiety. So if any of you out there are struggling with anxiety or get what you call nervous before you have to speak to people or interview for a job, please check out my book, because the first section, which is called The Power of Thought, will change your life. It will change your life, because I studied self-help techniques for a decade and then wrote this book and really simplified it all. So if it made it just real easy to comprehend and fun. And I've worked with a lot of famous actors who've written me beautiful testimonials.
Oh,
Allison Hannigan credited me for getting her the role in How I Met Your Mother. We worked on her audition together. So if you're curious, go to jackplotnick.com and check out my free book. It's there for you and it's there to make you happier.
Amazing. I'm curious. Okay, so I get what you're saying with backstory, but let's talk a little bit about Alan and Alan's relationship with the mayor and what that was like. You know, were you playing something in those scenes? Was it?
I'll tell you, it wasn't hard to experience what Alan was experiencing in those scenes because I was a huge fan of Harry's.
Mm.
And here's this actor walking on set with this incredible career. You know, I'm also come from the musical theater world, and he is, you know, he's a legend there. And so really, I just used what was happening, which was I was new to drama acting on film. I was a huge fan of Harry's, and I just took him in and learned from him and felt in awe of him. And I just used that because it just was very appropriate to the scenes. And what he was doing was so powerful. I mean, the way he was kind on the outside, but you felt that intense power and foreboding on the inside. And you felt it on set. He's a very talented and powerful actor. And there wasn't much I had to do except just respond to what was in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was it like getting the call when you're reading the script that you're going to die?
I mean, I can only guess that I was bummed. Because, you know, I'm sure my first thought wasn't, oh, cool, I'm the first human killed by sight. I think I was probably just like, oh, darn.
Right.
Darn it.
I want the work.
I didn't want to die yet, you know, and because I was loving doing the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can talk about that day on set if you want.
I would love to hear about
it.
Well,
I mean, that episode more than any is the most strong in my mind. And that's the episode we're talking about today.
Yes, Bat Girls.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I remember I arrived on set. It was the first time I met Sarah Michelle. And she was, my reaction was, boy, she's so professional and kind, and like, because you know the leads in shows don't have to say hello to you, and she made sure to, and mm-hmm. and she was very kind when she did. And then I was there while they were filming the scene right after they stake me where they run away, and I remember that there's a single take where you watch both of them jump over a fence, Sarah, and then a wall. Yeah. And what was so fun to find out was that if you watch the scene, you're gonna notice this that. On her way to jumping over the fence, Sarah runs behind a box. Well, the person running out of the box and over the fence is not Sarah. It's her stunt girl. Stunt woman, sorry. And I'm so 50, stunt girl. But so it was really cool how seamless it is. And it's called an in-camera trick where they didn't stop the camera. Sarah ran behind the box and her stunt woman just took off at the appropriate moment. And it is so seamless.
Wow.
Yeah. But you'll notice that Eliza, yeah, that she did the stunt. Yeah. She was so fun, Eliza. And it was really great to hang out with her. She was totally willing. Yeah, like, come to my trailer, you know, have a cigarette. She was really easygoing, and we instantly went like, oh, okay, like, I get you.
Yeah.
And you're one of the gang, and you're easygoing. And she was happy to do whatever stunt they gave her. And then wanted me to talk about the death?
Yeah, I would love to hear about what transpired, how that was for you.
So, you know, at that age, you're just happy to do anything. And I remember they said, okay, so you okay doing the stunt? I was like, sure. And they're like, okay, so they put this pad on my back. It was like, it wasn't a pad as much as like a piece of plastic, mm-hmm. you know, to protect my back. And they go, okay, so when we yell action, throw yourself against that dumpster and fall down. Okay, so that's it. That's all they said.
Your full direction.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I've had, yeah, around the same time in my life, I did a commercial. They were like, run into that sign with your face and fall down. You're like, okay, but I need to figure out how. So I did it, and I probably got stunt pay each time I did it. I don't mm-hmm. remember. But it hurt. That hurt a little. But it was more exciting than anything else. And then came the shot where they staked me. Okay, that really hurt. That
really?
They don't tell you that. Those, you know, they said, don't worry, it's a tractable stake. They showed me it. Sarah was really sweet. She's like, see, here's how it works. They were like, action and stake. And I was like, oh. I mean, I'm not acting there. It's, yeah, that stake hurt.
Wow, because I guess even if it's retractable, the force of it is still hitting you in the chest.
Yeah, and of course I had something to protect me, but it's still you're being punched in the chest.
Yeah.
But still, like, I wasn't, I don't remember having anything other than just like excitement and a little bit of surprise at how much that hurt. So anyway, then Joss came on set for my death. And that was the first time I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really exciting that he had come to set specifically to come down to see, watch the death and make sure that he was happy with it, I suppose. And I can't remember if he told me to or the director, but they said, have some blood in your mouth and let it come out afterwards. And I think I was the one who decided I'll be trying to talk and let this blood drip out. And so we did the shot and I die. And I'll never forget it, that after they said, okay, cut, print, that's a wrap, Joss came up to me, said, that was a really terrific death. And, you know, you never forget stuff like that.
Yeah.
And wow. I do. I love that scene. It's it was a satisfying end to my character.
Yeah. And I mean, it that image, you know, I mean, even when you search the character's name, Alan, like the first image you see is that like blood coming out of
yeah,
your mouth.
Yeah, I really enjoy the specific thing that he's trying to say something. I find that really unsettling to watch. I don't know. And
And we don't really know. I don't think we ever know actually why Alan was in that alley when he got staked. That like,
yeah,
was
like,
he going against the mayor?
Was he sneaking out of to like find someone to go tell on the mayor? Was he working for the mayor?
Right.
Was he trying to meet a date?
would that be your preferred?
Yeah, that's the backstory. you don't know, but I mean, I have my guesses, and I think that he was ready to switch sides.
Mm. Oh, that's heartening in today's day and age to hear.
Yeah, because you can see that it's never really in his heart to. He wants out.
Yeah.
You know, those last couple office scenes, he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah. I have one last question for you, and that's like a larger question, which is you were the assistant to the mayor. But if Alan was the mayor, what kind of mayor do you think Alan would have been?
You know, Alan is such a pushover, I would guess. I don't think he's inherently evil. I think he is opportunistic, meaning I think if someone had said, you know, if you let us drill in that nature preserve, we're going to give you all this money. And it's going to, you know, I think he maybe would have been convinced to do little things like that, mm-hmm. little evils. But I don't know. I think he was a pretty good guy. And I think all it would have taken is, you know, the ladies, Commerce Club to come in and say, we need a new veterans hospital and orphanage. And he would have been like, here you go. I got the money from drilling in the nature preserve.
A complicated mayor. How do we know to like him or to not like him?
Yeah.
That's incredible. I cannot thank you enough for
Oh, what a joy. What
us.
A joy. Thank you for having
yes,
me. Yeah.
And it's been so fun for us to get to interact with the fans. I, you know, something that I didn't ask you, maybe one quick thing before we go is, have you had experiences with the fans of the show? Do you do cons, or did you used to do cons, or?
I was never invited to a con.
What?
I know.
What kind of, what?
I know. I would have loved to. And I once went with Tom to one and walked around hoping I'd be noticed. I think one person noticed me. I just, you know, people tend to be on the lookout for the bigger characters.
Right.
But I love anybody who loves the show, because we're all really a brotherhood, not just of people who love the show, but who have the same ideals, who care about the same things, who care about empowerment of women, who care about bringing down the patriarchy, who, you know, people who have imagination and creativity and who can look at things in a heightened way. In other words, if you're able to understand these and understand the lessons he's teaching in these first few seasons before it became more serialized, then you're really a person who is able to see the bigger picture in a healthy way, because you're not just everything's black and white. So basically, I think, you know, you meet a Buffy fan, you instantly like that person, mm-hmm. because they get it, and they have good taste, if you ask me.
I agree 100%.
I mean, we don't need any more people, fans of football. It's right. Like, it's nothing good. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's just war put mm-hmm. into with uniforms that look colorful. But it's still that, yeah.
With you 100%.
Yeah. So
Jack for mayor.
So, hey, you guys, if any of you are connected to your community theaters or the theaters in your neighborhood, I wrote a musical that was on Broadway last year
what?
Called Disaster. I wrote it with Seth Radetzky, the Broadway host of SiriusXM Radio. It was a New York Times critics pick. It ran on Broadway for 4 months. It's a 1970s disaster movie musical with all hit songs from the 70s, and it's now being done all over the country. So
oh, wow.
If you'd like your community theater or your regional theater to do the show, just get the rights and it's there. We had about 20 to 25 productions happening this year.
So
and
exciting.
It's hilarious and it's got a lot of heart. And if you like Buffy, you'll really dig these characters and their journeys, because each person fights for survival. And by the way, every disaster that could happen happens. That's earthquakes, tidal waves, sharks, piranhas, killer rats. So it's
killer
really fun.
Rats.
But each person is kind of discovering the true meaning of love through this journey of trying to survive. And it's set in 1979. And again, it's got all your favorite songs, hit songs of the decade.
Yes, that was my last question to you is, where can we find you now? And so that's well, place.
Well, you know, all things Jack Plotnick are at my website, jackplotnick.com, including my free ebook, New Thoughts for Actors. And I have an Instagram account, which is at Jack Plotnick, where I put up really stupid videos. And so if you want to laugh, check that out. So that's where you'll see me.
Incredible.
Yeah, I'm currently recurring on Grace and Frankie as well. I've been in the last two seasons, and I've got a couple episodes of this coming season.
Wonderful. Well, it has been such a joy.
Thank you for having me, Kristen.
Oh, thank you so much for talking to us.
It's so great meeting you. You're awesome.
Thank you. You are too.
Yeah.
I know it's past the holidays, but you have a happy holiday.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I hope this new year brings you so much joy.
Oh, thank you so much.
And Jenny.
Thank you. Ah, Jack.
Oh my God, what a dream.
What a dream. Such a delight.
So many great stories.
I wish we had more of Alan, you know? I wish there was just a little more Alan for the world.
It's so hard to say goodbye to Alan.
It's so hard to say goodbye to Alan.
That was beautiful. That was actually Kristen, I should specify, so you all know that wasn't me, professional musician Jenny Owen Youngs, but rather my wife, Kristen Nolene Russo, who does not believe that she has a lovely singing
voice.
Just
a few riffs away from also getting the title professional musician. So Alan dies. I do want to say that, like, the moment that Faith stakes Alan, it's like almost immediate. She says, "I didn't know." And it's so sad.
It's really, really,
it's
really
so
sad.
It's so sad.
Especially when you think about it in context of what happens later in the episode. She starts bricking that wall pretty quick.
Yeah. And then the cops, we see, like, I think sirens or, you know, something like the suggestion of more cops. Mm-hmm. And they run. Angel runs into Buffy in the alley. This was weird.
This is so weird because Angel's like, "I've noted that you have blood on your hand." That's so weird.
Just like,
it's not like you're fighting for your life every night.
Right? It's not like we were, like, they were just in the bronze and Buffy had
a
gash.
No, you know what, though?
What?
He could probably smell that it's not her blood.
Ooh, deep.
And also creepy. Okay, but she runs into Angel and she lets him know that Giles has been kidnapped.
Yeah, he lets her know.
Is that not what I said?
You said, I think you said she.
Whoops.
I mean, listen, to each his own. But yeah, he lets Buffy know. And then we get this last moment of this scene
where Faith comes back for a last look at Alan.
Yeah, it's very sad. And then we go, luckily, we get a little comedic relief because Giles and Wesley are with Belle.
They're very different. They have very different hostage styles.
They sure do. Giles, and we've seen Giles in a hostage situation before. We know
he's... But we've never had him standing right next to somebody who's made of jello.
Stay calm, Mr. Giles.
Oh, my God.
And then Balthazar's like, "I'm going to take your kneecaps." And he's like, "There's a man and he is dark and he has your amulet. And my name is Wesley and my social security number."
I like my kneecaps. I mean, I have to say, I mean, I'd like to imagine myself being very brave in a scenario like this. But I think starting with "I'm going to take your kneecaps off" is it's a short line to finding somebody's limits.
You know what? I'm not a watcher, so I shouldn't have to be.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, Wesley is a watcher. How do they hire the watchers?
They clearly have, like, trash hiring strategies, except for Giles, who then they treat like trash.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, though, is that, like, Wesley, I think, is the ideal watcher insofar as the Watchers Council is concerned.
Right, they want, like, super by-the-book people.
Yeah, they want dudes, maybe occasionally women, who are there to research and give orders and who do not, like, it's very similar to what we heard, like, Giles talk about in Helpless, where he was like, she's fighting the war, you're waging the war. And Giles is fighting the war with her. Like, like, he's all hands on deck. And I think that the way that the Watchers Council is structured, nobody's supposed to get dirty in the Watchers Council.
Right. It reminds me of a structure that I can think of that also fights wars.
Jenny, you keep talking about these things
that are definitely made up.
We have the ability to understand them, but we don't.
No.
So Balthazar gets really mad in this scene, and he's like, there is one deal, and it is you die slow or you die fast. I feel like over the course of this episode, Balthazar's arc has just become more and more Eric Cartman.
Yes.
He's just like throwing more and more of a tantrum as he goes on and like losing his mind.
What is the Cartman line?
Oh, respect my authority.
Respect my, can you not just hear absolutely. Balthazar saying respect my, I mean, basically is saying that.
Also, just a teeny tiny side note. If anybody watched The People versus O.J. Simpson, starring Sarah Paulson, among other people, the guy who's in the Balthazar suit is the lawyer for the prosecution who has the heart attack or whatever in the middle of opening statements.
Oh, my God. You just waited to reveal that to me live on air?
That's right.
Holy shit.
Aren't you amazed?
I'm amazed. What a great fact.
I thought so.
Anyhow, then Angel's fighting and Buffy's fighting and Wesley is like, my Mr. Giles still. And then they
also, one of the medieval times vampires has a bleach job that's like, has an inch and a half worth of dark roots grown out, which feels like a weird choice for medieval times vampires.
Yeah, well, and also comes back to a question we asked and discussed multiple times early in the season, which is, do vampires have hair that can grow?
Yeah, yeah.
Still really not answered because he could have just dyed the tips.
Still a mystery.
Could have just dyed the tip. So they electrocute Balthazar, and Balthazar has this like really classic horror film moment where he's
great.
Like,
yeah. So well delivered.
Yes, he's totally dead, and then he's like, eyes open. And now I just want to point out again that his relation to the master seems apparent to me. He has been electrocuted,
via his
and
mouth
suddenly
shape.
We see, I think the master might have gotten his mouth electrocuted.
Oh,
That's where that fruit punch came from. I'm just saying. Because Balthazar got his whole body electrocuted and he's just one.
Oh, yeah,
fruit
he's all
punch.
Red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's entirely fruit punch. And he says, you're going to wish that I killed you when he rises.
Yeah, that's right.
Dun, dun, two. Who is he talking about?
So then, cut to the mayor, who's now impervious and ready for
holy
root beer.
Shit. And like, listen, this is some fucking Latin here. We have seen Angel do his fucking Angel Latin, and we've seen Giles do some Giles Latin. But let me tell you who nails Latin. The mayor. He is like fucking screaming the Latin. It's so powerful. And then he stops and he immediately is like, you know, I don't understand why Alan would miss this. He's always so punctual.
Oh no,
and it's just like, Harry Groener, man, what a great actor.
Yeah, he's
what
amazing.
An incredible actor. So, so wonderful. And then right. And then we see what all that Latin did. You know, Latin can do a lot for people.
You mean in terms of like making them impervious
yeah,
to stuff? Sure,
just,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Latin phrases that conjure magic. It's always in Latin.
Yeah, I guess that's a really good point. Well, I guess maybe because it's a dead language.
Yeah, well, it's an ancient. I
and
think it's
ancient.
Like the most? Is it the one?
I doubt that it's the
white
most.
White person
ancient.
Alert. White yeah. person
beep,
alert.
Beep, beep.
So, okay, so his face is cut in half.
Right, and then it just seams itself back together.
Incredible effects here. Just beautiful. Just
1999.
No, but I really do. I'm joking, but I actually do love the way that these effects make it look. It's special. And just like the mayor, he pulls out his little to-do list.
Oh, my God.
And checks off, become invincible.
Man.
So good. And
must be so satisfying to check that off after working for it for so long.
Right? And then this, right? Oh, because those items on your to-do list that, like, take many steps to get to, and you're like, oh, this is so frustrating.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that I want to point out of this scene, too, is just Trick. We haven't really talked about Trick a lot because he's been, like, similarly to Alan, he's been sort of, like, assisting the mayor and hasn't had, like, too many main plot lines. But there's this great moment between the mayor and Trick at the end where the mayor laughs and it is, like, this maniacal laugh. And you see
after he's been sliced in half and then is like, who's for a root beer? And, like, he, like, skips out of frame.
And you see Trick look at him like, this crazy fucker. I love him, you know? He's like, this guy's out of his fucking mind.
And I'm having a blast.
Yes, I'm so into it. So totally. I like that. I liked sort of like this little bit more of an establishment of their relationship that happens in that tiny moment.
Yeah. Then cut to exterior.
blinking motel. You know, the last time we were outside of this motel, a piano was gently tinkling in the background, and somebody was like, I really can't stay.
But Buffy, it's cold outside.
But now things have changed. Now, sometimes in a young woman's life, she must wash the blood out of her tank top in her dirty motel sink.
I'm going to wash that blood right out of my tank, you know? That's
what
she's humming to herself.
And then maybe you're doing that and your friend on her way home from church stops by.
God, this is such like a recurring theme.
What is Buffy's outfit?
I just like every time she shows up at the motel, she's dressed like an old church lady. And I just, like,
I think as Kate pointed out in her beautiful poem,
yes,
they really, you know, they really go hard in terms of, like, what does Buffy wear compared to what Faith wears in this phase, then in this phase.
Yes.
And they're, like, really hitting it hard, like, Buffy just went to church.
Yeah.
Buffy and prayed for your mortal
back
soul.
Back to being a good girl.
Yeah, exactly. Boring.
Yeah.
Boo.
Bring bad Buffy
Kill
back.
Kill a man.
Kill a man. Jenny means have gay sex.
It's all very
the
complicated.
The metaphor is very mixed in
flawed,
this episode.
Really.
Yeah, it's really. I wish I had been in that writer's room. I might have been able to help him along a little bit, but I'm a woman, so...
Stay out. Maybe you can get the coffee. Yeah. So we see. Oh God, we see that.
Are you upset because of the towel rack? Is that what it is? Because I understand that towel rack is rough. It goes from big to small. And Faith was like Faith like the towel rack. The towel rack was on the wall when Faith got to the motel. And Faith, having like not had a lot of life experience about how things are, she was like, "Well, it's big at the top and it's small at the bottom. So I will put one of every size towel to match." You know, it's just like this tiny upside down Christmas tree of towels.
Yeah, that is not the most upsetting thing in the scene, but it's up there.
You're right.
Force fields have been fully engaged.
Yeah.
And Faith is only showing Buffy her hard Faith shell exoskeleton.
Mm-hmm.
And she weighted the body.
Weighted it, dumped it.
And then we get like the most chilling, like it's advancing. And you see Buffy, like when she gets there, she's like, I'm here to help.
Yeah.
You know? And then their very last back and forth, which is like, you don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You killed a man, and Faith returning with, you don't get it, I don't care.
Right.
Fucking credits.
Yeah, it's really dark, and it's like, you know, obviously this is self-preservation for Faith. I think that it pulls out something that's very important between Faith and Buffy. They behave differently. They also come from very different backgrounds and different experiences. And where Buffy might be able to feel confident in saying, we killed a man and we have to talk about it. Like, her experiences have been way more privileged than Faith's ever been.
Yeah, well, if you read the, canonical prequel novel.
Go Ask Malice.
Go Ask Malice. The Faith Lehane story.
Uh-huh.
You'll learn a lot about Faith's past. I mean, you can infer a good amount from the show, but it's definitely, there's like a lot more harrowing detail. And
I mean, even on the surface, it's just like Buffy is living in a fucking mansion with 7,000 bedrooms and has 14 trench coats.
So mad!
You know what I mean? 40,000 cross necklaces. Like,
yeah.
And not to, whatever, like, it's not that Buffy's struggle isn't real. It's just that Buffy's circumstances set her up for internalizing things and acting on things in very different ways than Faith is set up to act. Faith is obviously does not have money and has not had a stable existence up until now, and she's just trying to fucking protect herself, and that's what's so heart-wrenching about watching her put the wall up. Is it's not like, oh, Faith, why do you got to do that? It's like, fucking, she has to do that. Like,
yeah,
it's the
like,
only
what
way
else
she
can
knows
she do
right. It's the
like,
only way
with she, the tools that she
yeah,
has.
What is she gonna do? Trust somebody else? Like,
yeah,
it's she's only been burned when she's trusted people. And you know, I get a little worked up about it because I think one of the biggest problems we have in our world is that we don't have the ability to understand that our experience isn't someone else's experience, right? That like the way that I experience X or Y is not the fucking same way that everybody else does. And once you, like, if we could just crack that one thing, like so much would be over in the world. But that's that. It's like the biggest thorn in our side as a society. And I just think that it's illustrated in how we see Faith and Buffy deal with this situation. Because you can easily, I'm sure there are people who watch it and they're like, well, why? Why is she being bad and Buffy's being good, right? Like, why why does she have to do that? She could be good like Buffy. And it's like, no. That's not it. So taking a dark turn in Bad Girls.
Wonder
here.
What's going to happen next.
Me too.
Hopefully more off-camera gay sex.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, I think we can, for the record, confirm that, like, gay sex happened in this episode. We talked about this on the Buffy watch and we didn't talk about it here. And we gave Hellmath to the wrong Hellmath or whatever. We have more Hellmath because the important Hellmath that we did when we did the Buffy watch was they left school.
Oh my God.
And it was daytime.
It was like class was still happening. So at the latest, it was like 2 o'clock.
Right.
Right. They bust into that crypt. Maybe it takes like 25 minutes to walk to the crypt. Give them an hour.
3 o'clock.
I believe this aired in February and we determined that the sun set at 6:15 or 6:30.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay, and you know that bronze was not happening until 9 p.m. at the earliest.
So
what were they doing? Maybe an hour for ribs?
Motel 6. I say a Motel 6. Yeah, Motel 6.
So are you saying Motel 6?
That's the song. No. Oh, I was saying sex, but.
Oh.
Motel 6. That's the song. I hope you liked it.
I liked it a lot.
That's my song. Jess and Jenny wrote one, but I also wrote one. Mine just goes, Motel 6. Yeah, Motel 6.
Vote for your favorite on Twitter.
So you have it. We're your authority, I think, and we declare that they did it.
Or at least cuddled.
Yes, at the very least cuddled. Made out. Made out and cuddled at the bit. They just did it.
Well, with that great mystery finally laid to rest and satisfactorily answered, I can tell you now, I'm free to tell you now that I'm Jenny Owen Youngs. And when I'm not making this podcast and writing Buffy and Faith fanfic, I am all writing songs, writing lots and lots of songs. You can hear some of them at JennyOwenYoungs.com/buffering. And you can give me a shout on Twitter at Jenny Owen Youngs.
You can. And you can find me and all of my Buffy and Faith fanfiction. Just kidding. I haven't written any yet on paper, but in my head.
Well, erotic novels.
That's true. I've written a ton of erotic novels. You can't yet find those on my website, but my website is KristinNoLean.com. That's KristinNoLine. And that is also my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle. So you can follow all of the goings on in my life, which is primarily Buffy related and cat related. So, you know, high relevance in today's day and age. You can also learn more about my work with LGBTQ communities and their families over at everyoneisgay.com and mykidisgay.com. And I also wanted to mention today that I run a series with Autostraddle, which we've mentioned various times on the podcast, called Getting in Bed with Kristen. It happens most Thursdays at 3 p.m. Pacific time on Autostraddle's Facebook page. And it's a series where I give advice. It's also a series where I have some really fun guests. I've had Tegan Quinn from Tegan and Sarah. I've had Jen Richards. I've had
Jenny Owen Youngs.
I've had Jenny Owen Youngs. I've had Steph Beatrice from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Oh, if you watch that show, I've had a lot of really, really wonderful, fun guests, and there'll be some very fun guests as well in 2018. So if you want to learn more about that, you can also just follow me on Twitter or Instagram, and I will tell you all about it. Or you can go to Autostraddle's Facebook page, and the events are listed there for you.
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at BufferingCast. And you can always drop us an email at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com.
Thanks, Jenny.
You're welcome.
You can support our work by rating us over on iTunes. Rating and reviewing helps even more. It helps people find us, helps people find the podcast, and that is how we grow our community. You can help support us financially over on Patreon. Go to bufferingthevampireslayer.com and just click on the Patreon link over there. Plus, not only do you support our work, but you also get fun things like Buffy watches, the MP3s of the songs in advance, Q&A videos. You know, there's a whole long laundry list of fun things happening over there.
Also, you can head on over to our store by clicking on shop at bufferingthevampireslayer.com. You can find sweatshirts and t-shirts and pins. Oh my, so many fun things happening over there. And something that we meant to mention at the top that we did not is so many of you have written to us about the fact that you're going to marches and protests all across the country, all across the world, and you really want to bring Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy on a sign to march. And that is the coolest thing we've ever heard of. Isabella Rotman is the artist who designed that first design with those little lizards with the little hats on their little heads. It's a great design, and Isabella has made a version that is available for free download in our store now. So you can go on over there and print up your own Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy sign to march with. And if you do that, please send us pictures. We would love nothing more than to see that sign marching across this country or many others where people need to wake the fuck up and smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy.
I just got very emotional thinking about it.
Yeah, me too. It's really, really special. So you just go to our store and click add to your cart at $0.00, and you can get that PDF that right now prints up to 11x14. And you know what? If we need to figure out how to make it bigger, we can. But I think for now, 11x14 is pretty great.
Also, if you do want to get a handwritten lyric sheet from this month's batch, you can do that over at bufferingthevampireslayer.com/greatergood while they last. The organization we are donating proceeds to this month is Time's Up, which is, of course, a new unified call for change from women in entertainment for women everywhere. You can learn more about their work at timesupnow.com. Stay tuned after the howl for me and Jess Abbott duetting like no two Slayers have done before.
Well, I think two other Slayers have maybe
duetted to a similar degree.
Yes.
Fascinating. Well, till next time.
Cowbell.
Going down, are you coming in? There's two of us and a ton of them. I live for blood and adrenaline. Turn them to dust, but it never ends.
If you're going down, guess I'm coming in. I've been good, you know, I think I've saved the world enough.
Bad girls, bad girls.
Two's better than one.
Bad girls, bad girls. Just trying to get some. If you don't enjoy the work, girlfriend, you're doing it wrong. Bad girls just wanna have fun.
The Bronx tonight. I'm cashing in on what's always been mine. Haven't felt this good in a long time.
Yeah, I knew you'd like it on the dark side.
I'm getting lost at the Bronx tonight.
You've been good for way too long, you know it's not enough.
Bad girls,
two's better than one.
Bad girls, just trying to get some. What's a crime? Anything is mine. One take half. Bad girls just wanna be bad.
Than one.
Bad girls just trying to get some. What's a crime? Anything is mine. One take half. Bad girls just wanna be bad. Bad girls,
two's better than one.
Bad girls girls just trying to get some. If you don't enjoy the work, girlfriend, you're doing it wrong. Bad girls just wanna be bad.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.